evening, wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arese's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast, the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time, and now we get to relive those moments in history with you right here on this podcast. Today, we will review the Pro Wrestling Spotlight show, or Pro Wrestling This Week, as it was called back then on WNYG in Babylon, New York. This is the broadcast from August the 21st, 1993. I'm in Texas calling into the program from Dallas as I was promoting an IWAS show there. I want to remind everybody that our Patreon account is rocking. We're close to 600 different pieces of content are up there now. $5 a month gets you in the door. And all you got to do is go to patreon.com/John Arese. There are other levels that you can participate in. And each time you are up in a level, you get more content and more bonuses. For example, our executive producer level, you get an opportunity also to appear on this show several times a year. And today we're going to be bringing on one of those executive producers, our good friend Anthony Pyrus. So go to patreon.com/John Arese and check it out. Lots of content and more being added each and every week. So right now we'll get Marsh on the line here and bring him up so we can say hello to Mr. SummerSlam.
Yeah, it was SummerSlam weekend. Always one of my favorites. I
love it. You know, I did watch it. I wasn't initially going to, but I did, and I thought there were some really good parts about it and some really not so good parts about it. I was very disappointed in the main event with the Bloodline, because it seems like they're rehashing it again, and that was, Jay's brother turns on him, and it was just ridiculous. The Ronda Rousey match also, I was expecting big things from that. And it turned out to be a snoozer, and looked like she was calling it in. And obviously, I think she's on her way out, which is sad. But good points, bad points.
I felt the main event was like swerve for swerve stake. And I was concerned early on that Shayna versus Ronda just might not translate well in a WWE environment. And I think it's really what it was. Like, they beat the crap out of each other, but in a way that WWE fan base and production is just really not used to.
It was what it was. You know, Mick Foley posted something really cool on Facebook today about Ronda and her reign in the WWE, her time there. And it's going to be sad to see her leave, because that's all indications are that she's leaving. But she did come in, really like a firestorm and just lit it up and did so well when she first got into the Federation. But or you can't even call it a Federation.
It's the Fed to the cool kids online.
Entertainment. So anyway, I mean, I did get a chance to see that. Other wrestling related news, I guess, is AEW is getting closer to that big show in England. That's going to be huge. Let's bring on our executive producer, one of the executive producers for our Patreon account. He's always in tune with what's going on in the business today, as yesteryear. Anthony Pyrus, welcome again to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast.
John, it is always a pleasure, a thrill, an honor, and a privilege to be in your presence. Not so much Marsh, but you, yes, absolutely. How are you?
I'm doing okay, doing really well. It's been busy time, lots of things going on between this podcast and another one of the podcasts that you listen to, the Gibby Show. So we were talking a little offline about that before.
Marsh, you know I'm only kidding. I love you to death. John, the Gibby Show is, as a baseball fan, it's must listen. I can't go without it, man. Congratulations on it.
Oh, yeah, it's doing really well. And John is up in Toronto this week because they're putting Jose Bautista into their level of excellence, which is honoring Blue Jays, great Blue Jays in history. There's only 11 members in there. He'll be number 12. So we had Jose Bautista on the show this week, and Gibby will be joining him on the field. First time Gibby's going on the field
since he got since he left the organization in 2018. Oh, wow. So it'll be fun.
And for non-baseball fans, having Jose Bautista show up on your show is a huge get. That's a huge interview. Haven't listened to it yet. I will do that probably in the next 2 days. But Bautista was one of my favorite players of the last 10 years.
Yeah, the bat flip heard around the world in 2015. So he's remembered for that. And he hit 54 home runs in 2010. He and Gibby are very, very close. And it's actually the second time Jose was on the show, because he was on back in October of last year. But we also brought on one of the premier baseball analysts, Ken Rosenthal, this week as well.
Yep.
Who is the senior baseball writer for The Atlantic. And, of course, he's on Fox TV broadcasts. He's the analyst who wears that bow tie. He's the one that had that infamous confrontation with Pete Rose years ago. But he's one of the smartest baseball analysts out there. So we were able to talk baseball, and I was even able to vent a little about the New York Mets. And we had a discussion about how they dismantled the team, and he called it revolutionary. So he thought it was actually a good thing. But anyway, we're here to talk wrestling. We're here to talk about what happened 30 years ago this week. August 21st, 1993, I was in Texas.
Yeah, this was a really cool one. It was a call-in. Bruce Jacobs taking over the mantle for you while you did it. I actually have just the opening, the full-on opening to hear how it went to get going as the first clip. And you have Donnie with you out there in Texas as well.
I did take Donnie with me, yes.
Okay, welcome to the program, everybody. And as you can tell, this is not the voice of one John Arezzi. This is his producer, Bruce Jacobs, sitting in New York. But of course, we will have the man, John. He is in Dallas, Texas today with the IWAS, as the IWAS lands in Texas for the first show in the United States. So John will be calling in just a couple of minutes, and we will hear from him in Dallas, Texas, live, where the IWAS will have a big card tonight. Also, along with John, Don Leibel is also in Dallas, Texas. His capsule will be coming up in just a couple of minutes. And we will be able to take your calls today at 661-1440. That's 661-1440. We will take calls a little bit later on in the program. John hoping to line up some guests. However, most people will fly in for the show today. And I know John was very happy about that. So don't forget, a little bit later on today, we will be able to take your calls at 661-1440, and hopefully John is with us now. He should be on the line straight from Dallas, Texas. Let's test it out and see if we are a go. John, are you there?
Yo, Bruce.
It works.
What's happening?
John, we have upgraded the phone system here at this lavish studio, and believe it or not, we will be able to take calls while we have you on the phone line. Just
Boy, that's something else, Bruce. I really must commend you on the efforts that you've put into this, and of course the staff at WNYG for making this all possible.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that big merger between AT&T and Cellular One. I think we fell in the middle somewhere, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah? So it's happening up in New York.
It is a beautiful day. It's a what I would call an 80-36 day. You know what that is, right?
An 86 golf day?
That's 80 degrees and 36 holes.
That's right.
That's correct. It's a beautiful day, and everything else is pretty much a standard status quo. How's things going in Dallas so far?
Well, it's very hot as far as weather-wise, first of all, and
how about wrestling-wise?
Wrestling-wise, pretty hot here in town. Last night at the Sportatorium, had the opportunity to see the Global Wrestling Federation in action. I haven't been in the building and Sportatorium in about 15 years. That was the last time I was down here for a wrestling match. But I'm joined here also by Don Leibel. Don, are you there?
Sam, John, and as you were saying, the Sportatorium certainly been around a while, and a lot of history in that building.
Oh, yeah. Big history in that building. And, of course, we're here tonight for International Wrestling All-Stars first show here in the U.S., and a star-studded card is lined up for the fans of Dallas.
Yeah.
I sounded tired.
I thought the same thing.
This was the morning show, though, right? Wrestling This Week was early.
Yeah, it was early, and then you know you lose the hour because it was Central, and I was out late the night before. Sensational Sherry was hanging out with me for 3 days. We did a lot of radio interviews together, and did a little partying, and you know when you're around Donnie doesn't like to sleep anyway, so. So it was, I was definitely tired and I was very concerned about the, advance ticket wise.
Was this the show you were talking, John, about? They only sold about, because they were giving out free tickets to Global, you were worried about the paid attendance?
Absolutely. And our advance was, you know, a couple of hundred in a 5,000 seater.
Yeah. Global was giving away a lot at the time.
They were flooding the market with tickets. And, you know, the guy that's in my main event, Jake the Snake Roberts, of course, appears for Global the night before. So that's always nice of him.
Jeez. Getting that extra payday, I bet, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a whirlwind. It really was. I mean, we did our rounds and Scott Putski was in town, too, and he did some radio interviews with us. We were really pushing it hard. And I think one of the problems, which we'll get into, I mean, but the promoter really advertised mostly on urban radio stations. So her marketing was directed towards the urban audience rather than you know traditionally country or rock stations that would lend itself to that demographic, but the market had been dead anyway. Dallas had been dead.
Do you think you would have been better served going to Houston or San Antonio? Or because I knew what the Sportatorium meant, but I knew World Class was dead. And when you told me that GWF ran the night before, I was amazed that GWF was even still in business at that point.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd have been better off served going somewhere else in Texas?
Probably, but this was a situation where the agency I was working with out of New Jersey, the same agency that sold the IWAS International Tour, this was a sold show. So this was a promoter in Texas that bought the show, and she bought it for $30,000. So that's what the number was that she paid for the show. So we booked a pretty stacked card, and we did what we could to promote it. I got blasted by a lot of the sheets because, they were saying I shouldn't have taken the show. I should have just not, my agent should have refused the money and not do a show.
Once the ticket sales were bad to just pull out of the show altogether.
That would have been her prerogative because we had gotten our 50% deposit, you know, obviously weeks before we got there, so I could pay the wrestlers' deposits and buy airfares.
But what are the sheets? What was their theory? Was to never have done any of it at all, or to pull
not have even gone? Shouldn't have taken the girl's money, the promoter's money. She was a new promoter. She wanted to run wrestling. She had several businesses there that were kind of learning more about her when I met her. And she was a really nice woman, but she ran beauty salons. And so, I don't know what wild hair got her ass that she wanted to promote pro wrestling.
What were you supposed to do? Say no? No, I don't want your money. No, I don't want to promote wrestling.
Well, and this is like his new thing. He's got all these titles made. He just came back from Southeast Asia. Needs to be in America. Here's someone paying for a show. You'd be dumb not to at least try.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so that's the way the agency ran. It wasn't like we were traditionally like WWF or WCW. I mean, this was a different way of doing shows in the United States by having promoters actually reach out and buy, because we were just part of the roster of World Entertainment Associates was the name of the company who featured, you know, acts like the Peking Circus and all these touring acts that they take internationally. And he also worked with legacy artists like Jose Feliciano and others, you know, a lot of heritage acts. So he was an agent that worked with acts and with venues all over the world.
This might be
wanted to do wrestling.
Yeah. This might be this is a weird question to ask because you said that I don't believe I kept the verbiage in there in the clips because you'd mentioned the urban radio stations and you said specifically that there were black marketed stations and Mexican marketed stations that was the thing. Do you know if her businesses were in those communities? They were?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so she just thought that she would just add it to basically her circle of already advertising.
Yes. Yes.
And it just didn't work.
No.
Huh.
But I got a new one in the sheets the following week because of the show.
All right. Well, you did go over the card and you mentioned all the stuff that was going to be on it. You did say that GWF was a really fun show at the Sportatorium. And then you put Donnie on because he's going to give a recount of things that are going on. And it's a little bit of a longer clip. This is longer than normal. I actually want to say it's closer to like 6-7 minutes.
Okay.
But Donnie really gives a lot of stuff here that I thought was just really good.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you, John. And good morning, Bruce. And sort of a personal note for you, Bruce. I know you're a big baseball fan. And coming into the hotel from the airport, we went by Arlington Stadium where the Texas Rangers play. And right next to it, they're building a new stadium for the Rangers, and it is, to me anyway, it looks like an exact carbon copy of Camden Yards in Baltimore. Really nice-looking place and has the old-time atmosphere around. And also, on the way to the Sportatorium yesterday, we went by the book depository, of course, where the shooting took place of President Kennedy, and really gave all of us a little chill there. Very historic. But as John said, it was a heck of a night last night at the Sportatorium. That was the first time I had been there. It was television taping, as they do every Friday. And there seems to be an upbeat feeling amongst the GWF personnel because now, from noon to one on Saturdays, they've landed a contract, from what we understand, for at least 3 months on KTVT Channel 11, which is their superstation around here. The owner of the promotion, Gray Pearson, not what you expect with a lot of promoters where they're running around during the shows, more or less sat in a box as if in a sportatorium, such as in baseball, a box with box seats and whatnot, and just taking things rather lightly. They had about 2,000 people at last count as they were still coming in. They had about 2,000 people, about 100 of those paid, but they certainly make up for it with the concessions. I mean, you couldn't find a place to park there. They come by literally by the pickup truckloads of people. It's a very old-fashioned atmosphere. You don't have no foam fingers being sold, no $20 T-shirts. You have your cotton candy, your popcorn, and they have a table selling 8x10 photographs at $4 a piece. And that's about it. They do some Polaroids. We saw Chris Adams doing that with they have two intermissions. No air conditioning. This place is hot. Some of the listeners that may have gone on one of the bus trips to Philadelphia, such as the ECW Arena, if you know how hot it was there, it was just as hot here, if not more. But it certainly has that old-time wrestling feeling, and the fans were definitely rabid. I mean, when Jake Roberts came out, they could have elected him mayor. They popped for Jake. But a couple other side notes before getting into the matches. Tony Adams, who has been managing Iceman King Parsons here for a number of weeks, no longer here. She's in the USWA full-time. There was talk, I remember reading in the newsletters, about Bill Mercer. Many people may remember years ago in Dallas for WCCW, he was the voice of the Von Erichs wrestling shows. He was not there. Doyle King, the regular announcer, was, and for each match they shuffle in one of the wrestlers to handle the color. Speaking of color, one of the funniest guys that I enjoyed the match is Cousin Wilbur. There was a fella in the NWA back in the later 80s using basically the same name. And this fella comes in the ring with a pig. And we remember seeing a dog with Davey Boy Smith. But this pig is over big time. Everybody in the building screams E-I-E-I-O when this guy comes. It's a lot of fun to watch, I'm telling you. But not a whole lot of gimmick ideas in the ring it's a wrestling atmosphere, and that's the best way I could describe it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The main event, Jake Roberts and Killer Tim Brooks, and Killer Brooks has been around for about 30 years in the business. He and Jake had a white snake with him that kept popping out of the bag during his match. The place was just incredibly it went on about 10:30. It was the last match, and the place just went berserk for Jake Roberts, and certainly everybody went home happy. There was a title change of sorts. One of the matches, it's a big feud that's been going on with in Global for a while now. Chris Adams, involving Adams and Iceman King Parsons and the California Stud Rod Price. Now, Adams and Price had a match. During that, the California Stud slugged the referee who went down. He hit the referee a couple times. They had a run-in. The guys couldn't be separated. Somebody came in the ring, they said was an official of the Global Wrestling Federation, and they stripped the California Stud of his North American belt. Next week, next Friday night, they are going to have a match between Adams and Iceman King Parsons, claiming they are the two top contenders for the belt. There's a good chance that Rod Price is going to Japan, as he frequently does, excuse me, for the network of wrestling run by Sakurada, so he won't be around. So Iceman King Parsons and Chris Adams are going to have a match, and the winner gets the North American belt on that. One other angle, Action Jackson, who, by the way, for the record books, he's the guy that trained The Undertaker. He got stretched off in a match, a newcomer, I believe his name was Terry Norris, and all this will be on television. I know we get it on New York Sports Channel on Sundays at 5 o'clock. I believe his name was Terry Norris. He came in and destroyed Action Jackson. He got stretched off, and I believe Norris is a trainee of Ivan Putski. So that was another big angle I shot. Also on a card was Coco Beware. As John was saying, Sherry Martel is in town. She was there, had a nice reception. And it above the dressing rooms in a sportatorium, they have a place called the Cage. There's no lights in there. And the stairs, well, there are no stairs, but the floor goes down on an angle as if you feel you're going to fall. And that's where most of the wrestlers watch the matches when they're not in the ring. And you get a pretty good view, and it's just, as I said, an old-time atmosphere from the building. A lot of history. You can walk in, you know, the Von Erichs did so much there for years. In fact, last night before we left, myself and another fellow stopped in Fritz Von Erich's former office in the building, and there wasn't even a chair in there. I mean, it was totally stripped out. But as a long-time wrestling fan, I certainly enjoyed being in the building. And Global, you know, takes its shots from a lot of people as not being an exciting promotion or of one with a very limited budget, which they are. But I'll tell you something, the people go away happy. The only downside is they have to get the people to start paying for the tickets if they want to make some money. Because, as I said, out of over 2,000 people at last count when they were still coming in, only 100 people paid. John?
Yeah, well, that's quite true. You know, you can't keep giving the product away. And I never really got into Global on television because it's maybe not high gloss, some of the other things, and I just didn't get into the angles or whatever, what they were doing.
Two things. Do either of you know who Terry Norris became or if anything happened to him? Because when I looked him up, I was a boxer.
I believe that was Ahmed Johnson.
Really?
Oh.
I believe it was. I could be wrong, but I believe Terry Norris became Ahmed Johnson.
Let me look up Ahmed Johnson and see where he started.
Please do. But I'll tell you, John, while he's looking that up.
Anthony Norris. So Tony Norris. That would make sense. Wow. Go ahead. Sorry.
Giving away tickets has got to be death. Because once I've heard that once a territory, once fans are used to getting in for free, you cannot get them to pay.
True. Yes. Very true. And I should have maybe done a little bit more research on the market. I wasn't aware that all that was going on a week-to-week basis there. So, yeah. And then you're in the same town, you know?
And I will tell you this. In 1993, Dallas was at GWF was 2 years removed from ESPN because I was all about daily GWF back in the early 90s, and there's no way I was watching them in 93, and I was still in college.
Yeah.
I was still in college, so I was not watching that week to week, so they had already lost their TV audience, and it, clearly, from what you're saying, they had lost their paying audience.
Yeah, it was a very depressed market, for sure. Mm. As wrestling was in general in 93, if you take a look at it, I mean, there weren't very... you know, there wasn't, it wasn't a boom period. Let's put it that way.
But John, you did say something interesting that's piqued my interest. You said it had been 15 years since you've been to the Sportatorium. So that means 1978, 79.
77?
77. What was your experience like back then?
In the 70s, it was great. Yeah. I mean, I was able to, because there was the WFIA, Wrestling Fans International Association, annual convention that year in 77 was in Dallas. So we got a chance to go to the show, and there were just incredible talent there. That's where I saw Jimmy Snuka compete for the first time. Big John Studd was under a hood. You know, some of the other names that I can recall off the top of my head. I mean, there was just so many there. And I got so many pictures of that I post on my socials. I put several of those pictures. Iron Sheik was there as well. You know, very young Iron Sheik.
God, in 78, probably had hair back then.
He did. Yeah. And, you know, Ox Baker was there.
Mm.
So Vicky Williams, I remember being there with Moolah. So it was it was really good. It was just kind of being there and experiencing the history, and being in the Sportatorium was such a, just a legendary venue.
God, I wish I'd gone just once.
The whole experience was cool. I mean, when Donnie referenced also going to Dealey Plaza, where JFK was assassinated. Right. And of course, I mentioned on this show before that JFK was one of my heroes growing up. And just to be there and standing where that happened and, you know, going into the Texas School Book Depository. So it was kind of an interesting trip, you know, the little sightseeing that we're able to do. And it kind of offset the, as they say in Italian, the agita of being involved in the show and all the drama that took place with a show that almost didn't even happen because she didn't initially have the balance.
I think you mentioned about a week ago she was trying to cancel the day of, correct?
She didn't have, you know, she was hoping for ticket sales. They weren't there. I had a crew of wrestlers there. I had, Kevin Sullivan's, the Conan's, the Mexican Minis, Jake, DDP, the Putzkies, Medusa, Bob Orton, Greg Valentine. I had a loaded show, and everyone had gotten their deposits. And I don't know if we probably don't reference it because Kevin Sullivan was the guy that sat this woman down with me, and Donnie was right there as well, telling her that she had to find a way to get the money and pay everybody before the show. Cause we said late because we didn't have the money, and the fans were sitting there waiting for a show to start that we weren't going to do until she came up with the balance. So it was really heartbreaking for me. But you know, lo and behold, I mean, she leaves the building, comes back with cash. And it was in the evening, so obviously, you know, what the risk was or whatever for her, you know, no one wants to lose, you know, she had to come up with 15K in cash that night. And you know, in 1993 money, 15K in today's money would probably be at least maybe double that, right?
Yeah. So, John, I will ask this question. At this point, you've been doing the Pro Wrestling Spotlight for almost 5 years. You've gotten into promoting, and I can hear it in your voice. You are exhausted with the radio thing, trying to get sponsors, blah, blah, blah. Do you have one foot out the door already?
Kind of. I mean, but I also had high hopes on AAA because the following week, you know, next week's program is from that historic event in Los Angeles. And so you go from 1 week where you're drawing a few hundred people. And then the following Saturday, the following weekend, I'm in Los Angeles with a show that had 18,000 in the building and 8,000 people that couldn't get in outside.
You right. Yeah. If God, if this had been the LA Forum, you could have made more money.
Yeah, or even running outdoors at the Coliseum. Mm. We could have done, you know, we could have done a house that was 30,000 maybe.
Mm.
Yeah, I get the impression that you thought this was just going to be an unfortunate step because Southeast Asia was so successful. You talk about it here in one of our next clips that your advances for LA are some of the biggest advances they've ever had. So this looked to be an outlier, not the focus. So
it wasn't a be all or end all, but as Anthony notes and points out, yeah, I was getting really tired.
You had just lost EVD, right?
Yeah, EBD was gone. Or was it? Maybe it wasn't on the show. I don't even
know. But I know you worked your butt off
to
get sponsorship from that. And that
well, yeah, I mean, you know, when Hobro Paints pulled out of EBD and Sheriff Grimaldi, and then, you know, even with NYG and the bowling centers. When we had the, you know, Jake no showing the bowling centers, two of the events, and that not drawing well, and they pulled out. The Long Island Bowlers Association, which was a major sponsor, pulled out. It was kind of like relying on LNS Comics, and I had always grandfathered them in at the lowest rate possible. I think they were paying $75 a week, which didn't cover the freight by any stretch.
I just know me. Everything you went through, I've been pulling out this beautiful head of hair to you know, just out of frustration. You must have been absolutely, and I can hear it in your voice. I can absolutely hear it in your voice, and pretty soon we're going to reset the clock, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, just looking at even the future here for upcoming shows, you know, you got the next one next week from 828, which is in Los Angeles. Then we come back with a 9/4/93 show at the NYG Warlord and Barbarian. Then we have another show in September. Then I really don't know what happens, but we don't have another. You know, we really only have, before we leave and I quit on the air, we have one, two, three, four, five shows. And then we're off the air for 8 months, and we come back in 94 from August 28 till January. And then the show's over, and then we reset the clock again.
I'm saying John Arizzi 1989 was full of P&V, but I can hear 5 years in how tired, how frustrated you are with the fact that, let's face it, you were a pioneer. Let's face it, you were a big deal. 25, 30 years later, your contribution to wrestling is finally being appreciated. But at the same time, back then, it's like, I just want to get this show on the air and do what I can do for the business and maybe make a dollar in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not working because, God, sponsors just didn't see the value in wrestling.
No, and the payoffs for shows that you promote, and the IWAS was a great, was a great, nice chunk of money that, you know, sustains you for three months personally, 4 months, whatever it was. And
it bugs me as a friend.
Yeah, well, that's the way it was like back then. You know, yeah. I wasn't getting a job with any national company. That was never in the cards for me. But it was what it was. And it was kind of like I was almost doing it out of spite in a way to prove people wrong that you can't make it. And I kept going at it. And what I really actually should have done back then was have this should have been a little side gig for me, and I should have had a really good paying job in radio or something, you know, that I had the skill set to do, but I didn't. But it was also a mindset of depression, and all of that, it goes along with it. You know, it's just kind of, you get into this abyss and it's hard to get out of it. And it
you love because you loved it. You loved what you were doing. You just saw. Listen, I am a failed salesman, and I know what it's like to have that big account on the hook, but it just doesn't work out at the end. And it just, it killed me, as I sure killed you.
Yeah, in this business it did. But, you know, once I got out of it, and once I really got out of it in 96, at the end of 96, my life turned around dramatically, you know, forever.
And again, I mean, he might be frustrated just because this is a failing show in the middle of a lot of otherwise successful things. It's just not going to look well or feel well. Like, this is frustrating. Right. He doesn't know if the show's going to happen.
Frustration.
And if you do talk about the Kevin Sullivan story, it would be after this episode, because this is before the show happened. So Kevin Sullivan hasn't had to pull her aside yet.
Yes, we had to. We had to corral her.
Yeah. We'll see if next week you bring it up or not, if you explain how it went off, is what I'll be curious about. This is before.
Yeah, I haven't even uploaded the Los Angeles show yet.
I do have a couple questions real quick. I thought it was really cool about Don mentioning you guys went to the stadium and the Daily Plaza. Was that your first time being there? Because you had said you'd been in Texas before.
I probably was at Daily Plaza in 77 as well. I probably went there.
Okay. Is this Donnie's first time in Texas?
I don't know. No. And I also was in Texas, I guess, way before that. 1980. The baseball winter meetings were in Dallas. And right. I went to the baseball winter meetings to be a job seeker. That's where I got my job with the Mets, was at the baseball winter meetings.
Which, by the way, John, you've had the most interesting life of anybody I've ever met. If you haven't bought the book yet, please go to Amazon.com, buy Matt Memories. It's an amazing book of a guy who just hustled his butt off. That's my cheap plug.
You're now my PR agent, my friend.
Yeah. Two other little points, too. I was wondering if you noticed, Don said that he went to
Fritz von Erich.
Fritz von Erichs. He said he went with somebody. Do you know who he was hanging out with that he didn't want people to know he was hanging out with?
Speaking of which, he's on the phone right now. Yeah,
Donnie, are you there?
Donnie!
Let's ask
Donnie,
him.
Are you there?
Donnie, are you there? Donnie, are you there?
Yes.
We were just talking about you because we're taping the podcast right now.
Uh-huh.
So, Mark, you have a question for Don.
I asked John a question about you.
We're covering the Dallas show from 1993.
Yes, a good mini bar.
Oh, go ahead. All right, I have two questions for you, Donnie. Was that your first time visiting the Grassy Knoll or Texas?
Yes, that was exciting. And you know how I figured that out? We were walking the streets during the day, and it was stifling hot and humid, unbelievable. And we're crossing the street, and I look in the middle of the street, there's like a medallion. And immediately it clicked that the medallion said something like, on this spot, on such and such day, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated or shot or something. I says, holy crap. I look up, and there we are. We're in front of the book building in Daily Plaza. That was amazing. And then right at the Grassy Knoll, there was some person there selling newspapers or books or something about, you know, conspiracy ideas about another shooter. And boy, I couldn't wait to hide behind that Grassy Knoll. There was a little bush there and everything. And my fantasies took off on that, you know, for that day. But what an eye-opener. It just hit me. And I looked on the ground and there was a marker. And I said, holy crap, this is where I'm in Daily Plaza. That's amazing.
And then he was asking a question and I didn't have the answer for, because the night before the show, we went to the Sportatorium.
It's you, me, and Sherry.
Me, you, and Sherry. Okay. We went and you went into Fritz von Erich's office and you said there wasn't even a chair in there. So who did you go in that office with? That was Marsha's question.
Yeah.
It was empty.
But did you go in there with somebody?
The only other person, no, I think it was just you, me, and Sherry that day.
Okay, so it's probably Sherry.
Sherry.
I would have just meandered in there on my own because there was a show going on downstairs. And I don't know who it was or whatever, but that was just amazing to be in there and to be in Fritz's office like that. It was empty, completely empty.
And then the night of the show, obviously, you know, we had gotten our deposit in advance, and then the woman who was promoting the show didn't have the balance. And you were you were there when myself and Kevin, and I believe her name was Dee for some reason. She had a company called Capri Promotions, and you were there when we actually sat down with her. And do you have any any memories of that?
Well, I can remember it was Nancy, yourself, me, and Kevin. And something I remember coming over and listening in that they weren't going to pay because they thought that there wasn't enough advance or anything like that. And we made a trip, and it was D, by the way. I do remember that. We made a trip to the Frito-Lay building, which is based in Dallas. And that's where their offices were, I believe, because I think she worked for Frito-Lay. And I can remember when they weren't going to do that, and Kevin Sullivan was the one who turned that no into a yes, as far as I remember. He didn't give up. And this was at the Sportatorium, because it was kind of like in limbo what was going to happen. I remember going to Frito-Lay, and then we went back to the Sportatorium, and the show was on. I don't remember much about
we actually ran the Sportatorium. Is that where we did this show?
Yes.
I don't even remember that. I mean my memory is so fogged, but we actually ran, I guess, the Sportatorium. That as well. And then of course they had the freebies the night before with Global, so you know, they were giving away tickets left and right. So
it's insane that I wanted to go to the Sportatorium so much. You promoted a show and don't remember.
Didn't you remember?
I'm 9% sure that we were there. We were there the night before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the show was there. That's the only place I remember being at.
Yeah.
A few years, but and then you know what else I remember distinctly? The night after the show, you, Kevin, Nancy, and I, we were walking the streets of Dallas. Nobody was around. We went into a sub shop, and then we were just walking back to the hotel, and it was just the four of us, because I know, I remember when she passed, I thought of that, but that was a very, like, an intimate moment where it was just the four of us talking.
Yeah.
And then at your convention, she said, when the little office where you were and doing payoffs and all, she said to me, "Danny, why are you always sweating around me? Hey, Nancy, look how you dress. Look, what do you think?" And I went into the ring with Nancy and Sherry. They kind of had like a verbal.
We were building a little angle between them.
Yeah. But I remember just how hot it was. And I think I was the most expensive plane ticket you had, too. It was like $600-something back
then. Wow.
But the room was nice. And
nobody was there. Great. Got my ass handed to me in the sheets the following week, too. So that was fun.
Half Dave Meltzer.
But, it was a good show. I enjoyed my time.
That's cool.
And it went by fast.
Yeah.
But Kevin Sullivan was the one who, you know, said, took a no to a yes.
Yeah.
And I think they worked for Frito-Lay.
Yeah, I know she had a couple of other entrepreneurial businesses. I think she had some beauty salons and some other businesses. And what really surprised me, and I was with the guys, with Marsh and Anthony Pyrus, who's on the show, our executive producer on the Patreon level. But we were talking about how the show actually went on late because we didn't have our money.
It did. Yep.
And then she got the money.
And you had that same problem in Venezuela about getting paid.
Well, the Venezuela thing, which we'll go over, you know, I don't know if we ever will, because we weren't on the air then. But that was because, you know, we bought plane tickets for Beefcake and Neidhart, and they didn't show up, and they showed up for another promoter, and there was another show, and we got fined for false advertising. But I, you know, we did get our money there. Savoldi, right?
We did. Yeah.
So Anthony was saying how, like, you know, how like my attitude, and I'm just like so down on the, you know, I'm tired. I sound tired.
I can hear it.
I was getting sick of the business.
Oh my god! The conventions alone.
The conventions, yeah.
Just the convention alone, man. It was just. It was tough. Listen, you do your show.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Good to talk to you, Don.
I talked to Steady Eddie before.
And yeah, I want to hear all about it. He talked to my hero, Eddie Cranepool. Eddie's got a new book out. And, of course, Donnie did an interview with him. News.
But anyway, I'll talk to you tonight, Don.
You got it, my friend. Don Leibel joining us.
A run-in from Don Leibel. Right. Jeepers, crow.
I love that. Nothing makes me happier than stuff like that.
Serendipitous.
John, before we continue, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
I know one of the big things about a year prior on the Spotlight was the Booster Club.
Yeah.
I know people had sent money. You gave them what they wanted. What point did you decide the Booster Club just wasn't going to be viable?
I think it was really, it was this year in 93. It was just, you know, you only have a limited audience. No one really wants to hear anybody cry wolf every single week. And it just, you know, it wasn't sustainable. But, you know, Booster Club members used to get into the conventions for free. And I mean, I gave them a lot of perks.
I would have absolutely bought a membership.
I know you would have.
If I had lived in Long Island, jeepers, crow, I would have bought that every day.
Yeah, so send videotapes out to them and they'd get t-shirts and discounts on everything. And, you know, it was kind of a way to try to raise money. It was like, it's almost like back then the GoFundMe, you know, so please.
Yeah. Or it was like an old Patreon.
Or a Patreon, right.
Yeah. So, all right. So we'll keep it moving. Let me see. After that, okay, this is where you talk about specifically the GWF giving away tickets. You and Donnie talk a little bit about things happening right outside of the ring, effectively, as you guys are setting up. It was really cool. I don't remember if we talked about it on air, but there's definitely a story here that I know you have.
Okay.
Got an opportunity to meet a lot of the wrestlers. I know all these guys down here are certainly looking for work. As you could attest to, Don, I was like besieged by everybody on the car, throwing business cards and tapes and pictures at me.
It was as if John was honey and they were all the bees coming around. Yeah. One fellow was handing him several 8x10s. Another one was writing down his phone number and address. Another one had a videotape. And John, one other fellow that you got to meet, I'm sure, I know Sherry was very happy to finally meet him. Her hero, as she said, when she was watching wrestling as a youngster, was Skandor Akbar. Very nice fellow. And sort of a fixture down here in Dallas for many years.
Yeah, as soon as he saw me, he goes, yeah, I remember you from the 70s when I was with Fred Blassie back in 1976. And it's like he reeled into this whole little speech and it was brought back some memories of the old days. But that's what's happening here in Dallas as far as Global Wrestling Federation. Of course, our card tonight is at Thayer Park Coliseum, which is about 3 or 4 miles from downtown. We'll be going there to check everything out later this afternoon. And, of course, the show is tonight. And from here, I guess tomorrow, I get back into New York tomorrow night. And then Monday, I shoot right out to Los Angeles because next weekend is the big shows in Los Angeles at the Sports Arena and on the 28th and on the 29th in San Diego at the Sports Arena. And just real happy to report to everybody out there who may be interested that the advance sale for tickets, especially in Los Angeles, are just very, very good. The Sports Arena says it's the biggest advance they've had for professional wrestling there in many years. So we certainly hope to draw a big, big crowd next week in Los Angeles for the joint AAA IWC wrestling promotion that will be taking place there next Saturday night. Real exciting.
Yeah, you were bombarded by people with 8x10s and stuff.
Yes, yeah, because, you know, they smell a new promoter in town and were trying to do some stuff, and the word about the international tour was still prominent. So a lot of people. I mean, that's where I met JBL for the first time, because he was a very polite young man, and he gave his press kit. And just, oh, yeah, that's the way it was there.
Was it people from the GWF show?
Yes.
They were doing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
What was his name back then? It was it Justin Bradshaw? John Hawk.
I think it was Hawk he used.
Yeah. I think it was Justin Hawk Bradshaw, yeah, to be honest. But I don't know if he was using that right before he went to WWF or that's just what they used when he used
it. I remember him. I think it was just Hawk. There was no Bradshaw on the name.
Just Hawk.
It was just John Hawk, yeah.
That's cool. Which would make sense. He would use John Hawk and they would change it to Justin when he got to WWF. That was their nature. But yeah, and again, interesting. You have the biggest advance in many years in LA coming up right after this that you can't seem to force people into the building.
The third largest gate of 1993 in all of wrestling under WrestleMania and SummerSlam was AAA.
Yeah. So neat. Let's see. You do go through your SummerSlam predictions with you and Don Liable. And then you review Clash of the Champions with the reunion of the Road Warriors. You think it's interesting because Animal's still on his Lloyd's of London, so you're not sure. Donnie does say it was a really nice surprise because him being away from all the sheets and stuff, he didn't see anything leaked or didn't have any idea what was going to happen, and he loves when he gets surprised like that. But then you go over what you think is going to be the most memorable moment of the entire Clash of the Champions, and I thought it was very interesting what you coined as to be the most memorable thing.
Let's hear what Karnak had to say.
But of course, with all the good things, what is the one thing people are going to remember most about this show? And that was probably the all-time blooper of professional wrestling. And a tugboat was brought in, like Fred Ottman. They had a Flair for the Gold interview segment where Flair was interviewing Sting and Davey Boy Smith, and then Colonel Parker and Sid Vicious come to the set. Sid starts screaming and yelling, challenging Davey Boy and Sting. And as they're getting into a confrontation, the lights go out, and reminiscent of the Black Scorpion angle, which was something that probably turned off millions of fans to WCW. Ole Anderson decides to pull another trick out of his hat and introduce a new character, I guess almost like a Darth Vader type of gimmick. But instead of the gimmick working properly, I guess, with this guy was Fred Ottman, a tugboat with the new gimmick, is supposed to break through a wall. He falls through the wall, falling on his, how can I put it, but he just fell through the wall, and his hood came off his head, and he immediately put it on very fast. But it was a total joke, and then when he got up, then Ole's voice came out of the PA system, similar to the Black Scorpion angle, talking like a Darth Vader character. And from what I understand, I talked to Kevin Sullivan, who talked to some of the guys who were working the show, and he said the crowd just erupted, the live crowd erupted with laughter. They were just rolling and rolling on the floor. You couldn't indicate that for off of TV, but when they got back after that botched segment back to Jesse Ventura, Ventura could not contain his laughter. So that's what people will remember most about the show, I think, is the illustrious and the spectacular blunder that Ole Anderson has committed, and hopefully it'll be something that will commit him to unemployment lines in professional wrestling, because that ridiculous stuff has got to stop. Unbelievable.
You were right, John.
Shockmaster.
You were right.
Yeah.
You were right. That was the one thing people still remember to this day.
Yeah, it's still on YouTube, and he just fell through the wall, and his helmet came off, and it was such a freaking ridiculous angle, and it was hilarious to see. But
WCW, this was the era where WCW was trying to be WWF, WWE, and they were failing miserably at trying to be the same thing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Bischoff was, you know, running the show, and they were changing things up, and they were recording at the TV studios months in advance. I mean, it was just kind of really just a horrible time period for WCW.
Yeah, I do like it. A caller calls in later, calls him Shock Blaster, because you guys can remember the name. But, I mean, Rob Schamberger's done several drawings of Shockmaster. The Elite Figures line came out with an action figure where he's upside down and backwards in the packaging.
How many times did this guy actually wrestle, though? Did he actually work?
He was in the War Games in September. He was He was a guy who was there for about 6 months.
No.
And yes, really? I swear to God, he was there for at least.
Your memory's better than me. I mean, I was, you know.
He teamed up with Dustin Rhodes and the Nasty Boys to beat some heat of Harlem Heat, Sid and Vader at War Games in September of 93.
Wow.
It was terrible. And I was talking to Bischoff a couple of weeks ago about that exact thing. And Bischoff regrets nothing. But at the same time, he understands how bad that segment was. But he thought Fred Ottman could be a big player for WCW.
Didn't happen. Yeah. And 93 to 94. Eazy-E doesn't regret anything, man. Really?
No.
Man, brutal. But you were right. You were absolutely right. That is the most memorable part of the entire Clash of Champions. You do a read for LNS Comics, and you mentioned that you saw the new WWF Hasbro Ric Flair toy. It's the one where he's holding his arm out to do a thing. And you mentioned that you could not believe how skinny he was. That compared to all the other toys, he was very skinny. So I pulled up pictures of it, and it's noticeable.
Yeah, on the YouTube version of this podcast, you'll be able to see that. And
yep.
I even sent you a few pictures of the IWAS show in Dallas that were in the Japanese magazine.
Perfect.
Linda Rufu was the photographer there that day.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And I think you even mentioned Bruce asks Donnie if he's going to go to the LA show, and he said not that he knew of as of yet. Did you,
right.
you know if he ended up coming out?
No, he did not. He did not.
Bruce pulls the wrong ad on the way in, like the welcome back to the show. He tried to pull one, but it said welcome back to WEVD.
Oh, nice.
And he goes, yeah, oops. And he goes, but it's not so bad because you guys are going to be back on WEVD on September 11th. So I don't know if you guys got any sponsor. You must have, but you're between.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, all the shows that have been uploaded are the ones that include this one. So my next uploading session will be tomorrow. So I guess I'll find out.
We shall see. You guys did get into callers, as Bruce let you know. You guys have a new phone system with caller ID and
it
a
worked.
Second delay.
It worked. I was so impressed.
Very nice.
There was some mean feedback at a few times, but you could hear Bruce shuffling trying to figure out how to turn it off.
Yeah.
But because I asked you about it, about the caller ID, and you go, we didn't have caller ID. Well, not until now. Now you do. This is Gary from Baldwin, and he wants to ask you about that new Japanese promotion.
He is Gary from Baldwin, and Gary, you're on the air with John. Go ahead.
Hi, John.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Okay, what can you tell me about Shoot Wrestling in Japan?
Well, is that the new promotion that starting up, they've been really promoting it as it's real, you know? But I don't know too much about it, to tell you the truth. Just what I've read in some of the newsletters, I certainly haven't seen any tapes of it as of yet.
Yeah, because there's a pay-per-view this Tuesday.
Is that going to be seen here, seen in the New York area?
Well, I can get it on the satellite.
Oh, okay.
Anybody with a dish can pick it up.
You know what I would appreciate? I'd appreciate you, I'm sure you're going to be viewing it.
Right.
And giving us your opinions on it when we get back, or when we call in from Los Angeles next week.
Right. There's also, a couple weeks ago in Broadcast Magazine, they have a full-page advertisement. It says, Shoot Wrestling, It's Real, presented by Front Row Entertainment.
It was in Broadcast Magazine, really?
Yeah, coming to pay-per-view from Osaka, Japan, October 5th. This will be the first UWFI Shoot Wrestling event, an exciting form of submission wrestling combining all the martial arts in an anything-goes contest of courage and conditioning broadcast in the United States.
So they're saying that that's going to air, I guess, in October?
Well, there's going to be one. This is being advertised in October, but there's one this Tuesday.
Right, John, I believe Big Van Vader's on that card as well.
Yes, that's right. Should be interesting.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
I appreciate the information.
Is this real?
Is it real?
Because
I don't think so.
Yeah, because if it was, they'd have nobody to wrestle or, if they'd kill each other.
Well, I'm sure it'll be real stiff, you know. So when you're saying it's real or not, maybe outcomes will be predetermined the old Maeda group, UWF, it certainly looked real, and it had the entire country, Japan, because over there, They really kayfabed it to everybody out there, and they had the media and the fans believing that it was all a shoot. And I think that this company is probably going to do the same thing, and that's the way they're marketing it. And the way Vader works, you've seen him work, and the way some of the other guys in Japan work, this could go over, and it could be a great new concept.
There might be something here for the States to pick up on.
Yeah, well, that's what the States try to do. That anyone promoting in the States have got to try to do something different in order to try to attract some of those fans that are no longer watching and attract new fans who would look in and try to see something, you know. And certainly I hope this is a precedent that could lead to some success.
You know, John, one of the central figures with this promotion is Lou Fez. He acts as a judge during the matches, as a referee, and basically as a figurehead, especially in Japan, where he's seen upon with much more respect and for a history of wrestling than he is in the States. And I'm sure that's one face also that will get a lot of coverage during the event.
I'm sure he will.
Okay, Gary, thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, Gary.
Take care. We'll talk to you.
Bye.
Good call.
Yeah, good. I remember hearing about that.
A lot of hype.
Did you get into it?
I didn't really see it.
Oh. I remember the ads. That's about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like one of those trivia questions nowadays, where every now and again it comes up in some sort of documentary thing or podcast, and you go, "What?" and you look it up. you guys talk about how there's two magazines that just went out of business, but the tape had cut in between. So I don't know which two magazines those were, but you guys basically said how PWI and Aftermag seem to be the only ones sticking around. So.
And lost to history.
Yeah. And then Pat from Hicksville calls in asking you about Asia. Mm-hmm. And I cut half of it off because you guys do talk for a while about Cactus Jack. When is he coming back? And it's kind of the same old that he's going to start a thing with Vader. And that, you know, and we talk more about Cactus in a little bit. But I thought it was really interesting, as you talked about this new franchise that was just starting to pop up. And I thought, how 1993 is this?
Hmm. At least there they all understand English, I would hope, fluently.
Well, for the most part, but they say y'all here and howdy.
And fixin'.
And we're fixin' to go watch wrestling.
All right, let's fixin' to take a phone call. We go back to the phones for John and Don. Hello, you're on the air. Who's this?
This is Pat from Hicksville, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Pat from Hicksville, how you doing?
Oh, okay. This is the first chance I've gotten to listen to you. How was Asia?
Asia was real good. I recognize your voice. You haven't called in for a while, but Southeast Asia was great, and we have another tour that'll be coming up in November to Hong Kong, India, Turkey. So it was an interesting time for us, a very, very exciting time. So we had a good time. It was fun.
And I think if it was the Bar Hooters, I'm sure it was the one in Houston, not in Florida.
No, this was actually, there's a franchise of these things in the Southeast, and they're springing up in various different cities, but they got a great concept. And
doesn't the GWF use them as
matter of fact,
ring girls?
Yes, you see the Hooter girls on the GWF, and they were out in full force. You know, they actually have on the photo concession table pictures of the Hooter girls that guys buy. Now, I wasn't even aware of this. Because, like I said, I don't watch Global, but the first night that we were in town, myself and Sherry Martel and Scott Putski went down to Hooters, and our waitress was just a knockout, real knockout of a girl. And I'm utilizing her tonight in between matches to model our IWAS T-shirt and program, so she'll be working for us tonight. And I'm drooling already thinking about it.
Diamond Dallas Page, as I told you earlier, before he got into wrestling, a place down near Miami, he's the manager of Hooters. Now, leaving a place like that and a job like that to go to the AWA, I don't know about that.
I guess we get some of those Diamond Dallas girls, right?
You stood.
I do remember that. I do remember the Hooters girls, yes. Yeah. Always, yeah.
I thought it was neat. Like, you never think about like how they just didn't exist for a long time. Like, it's just in the small little area. It's popping up, and you're starting to utilize them as ring girls and stuff. Which,
yeah,
pretty neat. And to find out DDP owned one or managed one, I think you said.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, Which makes sense, because you always talked about how you didn't know how he was getting all those girls all the time. And
I mean, Hooters, I still, you know, I haven't gone to a Hooters in a long time. I used to take my nephew when he was just like seven, eight years old. And get all the, you know, because he was very personable, and get all the girls take pictures with him. And so, yeah. I was trying to corrupt my young nephew at a very young age.
Good man. Good man, John.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I thought that was really neat. Right after that, we get Brian from Long Beach.
Ooh.
Which I think is a pretty neat one.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll play it.
Is that Brian Last?
It's Brian Last, yes.
Brian Last.
And by the way, anybody trying to call in, if the phone rings, just let it ring. We will pick it up. And we're putting in a new phone system here with caller ID and also the 7-second delay. So that's why we are experimenting. So you tonight, today are guinea pigs out there. So we appreciate
it. Oh, very good.
We appreciate it. So let's go back to the telephones right now. Let's see who we have on the air with us. And hello, who's this?
Hello, this is Brad from Long Beach.
Brad, how you doing? You're on the phone with John and Don live in Texas.
Yeah, I got two questions about the Clash.
Yeah, Brian.
First of all, with the Cactus Jack thing, did you notice how Tony Schiavone was trying, when he said, like, the last time we saw Cactus Jack and he just didn't finish the sentence? Is it like they're trying to phase out the search for Cactus Jack?
Oh, of course they're trying to do that. That will not even be mentioned on future TV.
Yeah,
that was an embarrassing thing for them, and of course they think that we're all idiots and we're not going to remember what stupidity they did. They're not even mentioned. They try to just ignore their mistakes.
Yeah, and with the tag team title match, did you see like all those bad moves they did, like how they screwed up? And at the end when they showed the slow motion ending with Sir William hitting Austin, they actually showed Austin missing Sir William by like 3 feet.
In slow motion, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't happen to catch that as well.
Okay, thanks a lot, John.
All right, Brad, thank you very much for your call.
Future broadcaster.
Still complaining about people missing those hits.
Yeah. I mean, when he called him back then, he could have just said, hello again, friends.
Yeah, right.
And you are our friends.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, too, because the reasons he calls in is so all over the place. It's either because he heard some rumor from somebody that's like deep out of the dirt sheets that people shouldn't be talking about, or it's this... hey, do you see how they did a bad thing on TV?
He was just learning. He was just getting in.
Eric from Brooklyn calls in. You guys are talking about the ticket sales, the marketing that being strange in Texas, like we had talked about. And he asked you if AAA was going to come to New York. He had heard about it and asked if you knew about it. And you're like, yeah, I'm involved in that. So you're going to hear more about it.
Yeah.
You run some ads. The show goes off where you guys are talking about how... for the LA show, you're going to try and get George Napolitano out there. You have Japanese and Mexican magazines going to be out there to cover the whole thing, which, you know, is the magazine you got there. Steve from West Hampton also goes on about asking what's going on with WCW and Ric Flair. And Don says something before we play our last clip. He says something that was really interesting where he says he thinks the only thing that's left to get people to watch is WWF versus WCW. He goes, some sort of dream match scenario or some sort of angle where they're fighting each other is the only thing that hasn't been done he thinks would get people's attention. And when you think about it, that's really not a stretch from NWO.
No, it's not.
He was absolutely right.
He was. Yes. Yeah.
Prolific Don Liable. You might call in again if we say his name too many times.
I know. It's like Beetlejuice.
It's like our Candyman. Look in the mirror. Say Don Liebel 3 times. He'll show up.
Yeah.
But I got this last clip here, which I thought was really interesting. So it runs the end of an ad, and then I left the dead air because there's a few noises I hear, and I want to know if you think that's Bruce. Did he, like, leave the room and come running back in? Was he sneaking a cigarette or something? Because there's just some thumping around, and then this very unique phone call.
Okay.
Call costs 99 cents per minute. Children under 18 must have parents' permission.
Okay, we are back. A quick commercial break. And John and Don live in Texas. And John, we have a little bit of a surprise caller for you right now.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second as we punch her up. Hello, you are on the air.
Hi, John.
Who's this?
Who's this?
Hey, it's my mom.
How are you? How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Okay, you sound a little tired.
I am. You know how it is.
I know. I was listening. I said, let me call him.
Hello, Snooki. This is Donnie.
Hi, Donnie. How are you?
Very good.
How's everything going?
Everything's going well here. John's behaving himself quite well.
Yeah. I think so. Okay, John.
Okay, Mom. Listen, I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Mom. Take care.
Okay.
All right, we get them all on the air here for you, John. And
661. Where's my sister? Is she calling in too next?
You probably just signaled, though. We might be hearing from her any minute. 661-1440 is the number. We have another, 9 minutes or so. And then after John, of course, Mickey B's jukebox review.
The Prince of Rock and Roll.
The Prince of Rock and Roll, 44 waistline and all. I think it's down to 43 this week, however.
Yeah, that was when I uploaded the show and I heard that. I was jarred. It was amazing for me to hear my mom's voice again after, I lost her in 2007. And she was extremely nice on that call.
Moms always look out for us, don't they?
Yeah. And I guess because she always worried about everything I did. And the fact that I was not in New York and I was in Texas, this was her way of kind of checking in to see if I was doing all right. My mom and wrestling, it was interesting. She never poo-pooed it or put me down for it. You know, even, back in the days when I was doing the Blassie fan club, I had the really beat up old typewriter, and I was trying to convince my dad to get me a new typewriter. And he was like, I don't want to, he was just kind of no. And she was like, made sure I got it, And so she always supported me, and even the convention, she showed up at a few of those and some appearances. You know, Mick Foley scared the shit out of her when she met him. She was frightened. My mom was just frightened about everything.
What moms do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I never forget, she had kind of a crush on Cowboy Bob Orton, because he sat down when we were going to Southeast Asia. We were in the holding area, JFK International Airport, and in our room that they designated for us. And he sat down next to her and had a conversation with her, and she lit up. And another wrestling memory with my mom was when I was involved with Herb Abrams, and the apartment we lived at, Herb was in town with John Tullis. So they came to pick me up because I was doing a promotion with Tullis and Nancy, and we were going to GBB, and Herb pulls up in a limo, knocks on the door, and John Tullis, and it's John Tullis and Herb Abrams at my front door. And my mother just fell in love with John Tullis too. She just thought he was amazingly handsome.
John, how do you spell wrestling?
T-O-L-O-S. So yeah, she's had those experiences, and she got to meet Bruno, and she got to meet a lot. But that was kind of like, for me, you get cold chills, and I heard her voice come out of the speakers, and I'm like, holy smokes, I never remembered her calling into the show before.
Knowing you as I do, I know Mrs. Arezzi would be very proud of her son today.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she should. She should. And my dad, too.
But we're you and I are both mama's boys, so yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, Margaret Pyrus is still going strong.
Yes, my mom would fight for me. I mean, I never forget this. This is another cool story. I know, we're going to wrap it up soon. But, I mean, I was delivering – it was 1969. I was 12. My first job, kind of regular job, was paperboy for Newsday on Long Island.
Yep.
And I used to work my ass off and, deliver the papers. And at the end of the route, you'd go back and, whatever leftovers there were, whatever you had, you'd – turn them back in. And I had a manager in the office who, when I came in, and he had, he said, I'd like you, I want you to sweep the floor. And I was like, I just got done with my round. I'm not sweeping the floor. So he was like, I really want you to sweep the floor. And I said, go sweep your own effing floor. And I was only 12, so I'm maybe disrespectful for an older guy. So he grabbed me, and he, like, pushed my head against the wall, right? So what did I do? I went home and told my mom. I was 12. And she got in the car and went over there and proceeded to kick his ass.
Sounds like you and my mom were made from the same cloth, because I'll tell you, no matter what job I had, I came home from a hard day's work with a tuna fish sandwich and tomato soup and a glass of milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, good memories. My mom was a special woman. I mean, not everything was good. She had a lot of problems emotionally, mentally, whatever. But to be able to hear her voice today after after years, unexpectedly.
I'm glad you got to hear that.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool thing.
I know there's no way you'd remember it, but you can almost hear it in your voice a little bit. There's a moment where you go, hey, it's my mom.
Yeah.
And you kind of start laughing. And there's almost this hesitancy of like, what Snooki. Is she going to say?
Snooki. Yeah. That was her nickname. Her name was Mary.
Snooki, it's Donnie.
She got her nickname from my grandfather. And if she liked you, you could call her Snooki. If she didn't like you, she said, call me Mary. She goes, my friends call me Snooki.
That's funny. The only thing that's a bummer is she didn't call you by some little nickname or something. It was very much John.
It was Johnny Boy. Johnny Boy.
Is what she called you?
Yeah. Yeah.
She didn't do it on the air, though. I was hoping for a little moment of something.
Yeah, Johnny Boy was my nickname, and that was the name I went by from the family. Cool. It was always Johnny Boy.
Yeah.
Great hearing your voice.
Yeah, yes. I loved it. And what a great voice. John. Great.
Johnny, come home.
She didn't pepper it with any obscenities, which is good.
No, I just thought it was you could almost animate her. It was such a little cartoon sounding voice there. It was so perfect.
You would have loved to seen her and Cactus Jack interact, man.
Oh.
When Mick would knock on the door and she'd like, I'm afraid of him. You know, and he's so
John,
nice to her.
Probably bringing her John, flowers and everything.
True story. My mother took me to a WWF house show in 1988. Ravishing Rick Rude came to the ring. I was trying to get my mother to go in the ring for a Rude Awakening, but no such luck that night.
No luck. Wow. You know, the special memories we have, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So great. But yeah, that was this show. It was episode 230? 299? August 21st, 1993.
Yeah, it was episode 232.
232. Oh, my numbers are off.
Yeah. And numbers are way off. They're skipping around.
My numbers are way off. I'm all over
the place. But John, you're not even talking about SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
You've got so much going on. You're not even talking about the big SummerSlam show, which hopefully I can review for you soon. But
Donnie and him went through their predictions early on, and then they just moved on. But they just ran the card and their predictions.
We didn't spend any significant time on it at all.
Yeah.
And what a disaster that turned out to be.
Mm, yeah.
No Shockmaster.
No Shockmaster. Next week's show, we're from Los Angeles. I haven't heard it yet. We'll see what happens. I don't know if there's any guests or anything like that. I have no idea. I do remember we were at a wonderful hotel. The Bellagio on Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. So that was nice. It was very nice. And that was the weekend that I did some hot oil wrestling.
Wait, you in?
We need video. We need video, John.
I got a couple pictures. No one will ever see them. We went to a hot oil wrestling. Jake the Snake Roberts, DDP, Ron Scholar, and they paid for me to roll around in the oil with a couple of hot oil women wrestlers.
Sounds like my bachelor party.
Did that end up in the book?
It might have.
Might be in the book.
I have the pictures, and it's just so horrific. These women,
come on, for patrons.
They were like,
for patrons, $5 in the door.
I was topless, man. I mean, I had like a muumuu on. They couldn't find a pair of trunks that would fit me. So it was, you know, I said, fuck it. You know, I just did it and rolled around
fun, with
my girls in oil. And Jake and DDP were just, they were rolling. It was incredible. They were laughing their asses off. It was crazy. I think Conan was there too, actually.
Wow. We should get him back on to see if he remembers it, could tell the whole story of it.
Well, that would be nice. It would be appropriate around this time to bring him on anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, guys, it's great. Anthony, I know you have another assignment you have to do tonight. You'll be
tonight. Tonight I'm covering AEW for your old friend Mike from College Point, Mike Johnson, PWInsider.com. I do the play-by-play. And then me and Corey Strode for the elite members of the PWInsiderElite.com section, we do about an hour and a half post-game show.
There you go. I mean, you're always active. Your support of this program and the efforts that we do, it's greatly appreciated. It's always a pleasure to have you on with us, my friend.
John, an honor to be here. And again, everyone listening to this podcast who's not on Patreon, please, $5. That, like you said, that's two drinks at Starbucks in round now that
less
it is
than
at
one,
three.
Actually. You can't get a coffee for under $6 anymore at Starbucks.
Yeah. That's two coffees at Dunkin' Donuts, guys. $5, you get all the archives. And believe me, I think those archives are going to be big money soon when we start over again. I cannot wait to go back to 1989 with you and Marsh.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have fun with it.
It's going to be cool.
All right, Anthony, great to see you, my friend.
Pleasure, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Anthony Pyrus, one of the executive producers, and Joseph Holloway will be joining us in a couple of weeks, I believe, with the Warlord Barbarian show in the studios of WNYG. So that's going to be interesting. They're in the studios. They were doing a promotion at World's Gym. I booked them at World's Gym in West Babylon. So we'll have them on. But Marsh, interesting one. Interesting show.
Yeah, this one was neat. I mean, we've done a few remote ones. It's always nice to hear Bruce get a little bit more involved. He was in really high spirits in this one. It was just neat. It was really neat, the stuff that you were covering. And really, sometimes you do these remotes and it's very much like very promotery. We're going to do this and people come down to do this. This was very much more so, less promoting the event, so much more so, this is what we're doing and what's happening. And this is the whole scene. Which
in real time, yeah, that's what's so cool about it. And it was kind of cool that I did hear from Bruce Jacobs this week, and he's agreed to come on. He said that he wants to talk after August 27th. He's going over on vacation. He's going to Ireland, but I do want to do a dedicated show to him here, Marsh. So I think we could pull some really cool clips of Bruce and we could tell some funny stories. And he was there from the beginning to the end. So,
and he was on the Southeast Asia trip.
Yeah. So he'll be there. It'll be a one-on-one with Bruce and we'll play clips. And, I'm so happy that I heard from him. And, so we're happy about that. So anyway, before we wrap it up, anything, on your end, what are you doing? Give us some, places people can find you. Give us a little recap of what's going on in Marsh's life right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm always here with you, Pro Wrestling Spotlight on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com for Queen of Carnage, me and Medusa. We just did a two-part interview with Lisa Marie Vaughn.
Oh, I was you know, she was here.
Medusa?
Yeah, in Nashville. I had dinner with her last week.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Not much. She told me she was in Nashville. She came back, we recorded this. She's on her way to Canada now. So we haven't had a ton of time to catch up about everything.
It was a while.
But I knew that she was going to be in Nashville. And I knew that you intended to see her. Did you guys end up staying out late?
Not really. I mean, we got together at the Palm restaurant in Nashville at 4 o'clock. And she was there with her husband, Alan.
He's great.
And yeah, what a great guy. My goodness. And then I had another client of mine there who, I got a book deal for, entertainment related. And she had a friend of hers with her as well. They're real estate agents in Nashville. And she wanted to meet Medusa because her life was kind of like Medusa's. growing up.
Yeah.
Horrific. And she made it and she became this big real estate agent. So anyway, we all got together at the Palm and it got a little wild.
That's cool.
Alan and I were the most behaved. Then Deborah was behaved as well. Medusa was behaved. So, but the other two, that's another story. Anyway, I interrupted you. What are you doing with her? You guys are with the Queen of Carnage, so I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. We just did an interview with Lisa Marie Vaughn, the former Victoria or Tara, depending on where you like to watch her. And I thought that was a really interesting interview. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that much about her life and career. So it was really cool to dive into that. And then and speaking of dive in, I mean, about every other week or so, me and my buddies like to drink a little bit in the dive bar of the IWC, I call it, and just talk about what's going on in wrestling on the rocks. So
and you did that over SummerSlam, right? You did one.
We've not hit the SummerSlam one yet, but I mean, by the time people hear this, we probably will have.
Cool,
but yeah,
very cool. All right, always good to see you, Marsh, and we will be back next week with the big show from Los Angeles.
Yep,
from 30 years ago. That'll about wrap up this edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Join our groups wherever you may be perusing social media, Twitter at John Arizzi, Instagram at John Arizzi as well. We have the John Arizzi's Matt Memories page on Facebook, which is really good. I just posted some pictures of El Olympico, Greg Valentine, and a picture of me and Pee Wee Herman actually got 3,000 likes. So, that was a shocker. So, I mean, there's a lot of fan engagement there. A lot of people communicate. That's our public page. There's a private group as well on Facebook. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And don't forget, become a patron. And that helps with the production cost for this show. And it's patreon.com/John Arizzi. Also, check out the Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden podcast. That covers shows I went to 50 years ago. I'm an old son of a bitch for sure. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. The new show was just recorded, and that will be released on a week before August 30th. So we're keeping busy with that as well. I always like to thank our producer and creative director, Marsh, each and every week. And thanks to Patreon executive producers, Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway. And for each and every one of the patrons for your support, helping with production costs for this show. Until next week, when we relive more history from Los Angeles from 30 years ago with the debut at AAA. This is John Arizzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.